I first met our next speaker when she was sitting behind a desk as the deputy chief of mission in Kuwait. I think it was 1992. Since that time, Ambassador Barbara Bodine has accomplished a great deal and been in some extraordinarily demanding positions. She currently is diplomat in residence at the Woodrow Wilson School of Public and International Affairs at Princeton University, and she divides her time between Princeton and her home here in Alexandria. Please welcome Ambassador Bodine.
I'm from the State Department, so I don't do PowerPoint. Let's see if I can get this out of the way. There's actually been a very interesting progression on this panel, and I want to thank Mr. Blanchard for providing me the lead-in for what I wanted to talk about. What I want to do is take the whole question of defense cooperation and look at it from a slightly different point of view. Not so much military cooperation, but defense cooperation, and those are very different. I think defense cooperation has been treated increasingly far too narrowly. We're looking at things, we're looking at places, and I don't discount the need for the military cooperation and the sales cooperation that's been well outlined here, nor do I discount at all the threats that the Gulf states face. The Gulf has become, over the last several years, certainly since I was in Kuwait, almost a continuous string of U.S. military facilities, bases and access that range all the way from Oman to Kuwait. The sales figures, Dr. Cordesman has very well outlined those. They're astronomical. And we've had longstanding engagements with the militaries, as Mr. Blanchard has described them as legacy arrangements. These are not insignificant, and they're not unimportant, and they do need to go forward. But I do think that we need to open the aperture considerably when we think about defense cooperation, both from our point of view and from the Gulf states' point of view. The Gulf states are going to need a guarantor, but we are not necessarily going to be the sole provider of those guarantees. And we need to get away from what I think has become an overly militarized and slightly narcissistic U.S. approach to the Gulf. There was at least one chuckle on that. The dependency has really become a far greater and far broader interdependency between us and the Gulf. Oil is talked about a great deal in the current campaign. It's yammered about almost continuously. We are either going to become independent of Middle East states or those who don't like us, and unfortunately sometimes those are used interchangeably. But it is oil and energy in its broadest sense. The trade has been talked about. The financial interdependence has been demonstrated in very real terms in the last few months. First with a number of the Gulf states, the sovereign wealth funds bailing us out, and now, as we've read in the press, many of them facing their own very significant financial problems. We continue to look at the Gulf states, however, as tin cuppers. I think it was General Wesley Clark the other day talked about, you know, we working with the Gulf states to prop up Pakistan. So we still see them as where we go tin cupping. But we also have greater political interdependence with the Gulf states. We have a sharing, an enduring sharing of goals. We still both are deeply dependent on the free flow of oil and energy, and as was recently stated, of imports as well as exports. The territorial integrity and the sovereignty of these states are both obviously critically important to them and critically important to us and our friends and allies around the world, as is the prevention of a hostile power taking over the Gulf. Now, that was originally the Soviet Union. That is well past. But the issue of hostile powers and hostile forces is still very relevant. But these terms have changed over the 30 years since they were first formally articulated in the Carter Doctrine. The free flow of oil, as I said, is also now the free flow of investment, imports, and other trade. Territorial integrity and sovereignty is not simply that from outside powers, but the domestic stability, security, and long-term legitimacy of these states. And as I said, the hostile regional powers are not just external powers such as the old Soviet Union, but both regional hegemons and domestic threats. These are not issues that can be dealt with by military cooperation solely. I think one of the key elements of those of us from Princeton call the canon of St. David of Petraeus is that these are 80% political and only 20% military. And therefore, I think when we start looking at defense cooperation, we have to redefine it in a more broadly political terms, diplomatic terms, more in terms of a dialogue and less of a lecture series, and more in terms of partnerships. The Gulfies do want to play, I'm sorry, I mean that term affectionately, the Gulf states do want to and have begun to play a far greater regional role, and we need to recognize this. Their broadening financial power has led to a greater political engagement around the region. Many of them have taken on some very productive, constructive roles in conflict resolutions in the region. And much of their investment is now leading to some job creation in the region and investments that the U.S. itself would not do, but would certainly do prop up our broader interests. And the media revolution that has taken place within the Gulf has changed the political dialogue and the political landscape in the entire region in ways that are fundamentally positive and also need to be engaged and supported. Do they want our continued engagement? There was some very interesting reports that many of you may have read from Brookings and the Council on Foreign Relations last spring, where they made it very clear that they still do want our engagement and our support and our encouragement on fundamental issues such as reform and liberalization, political, social, and commercial. But they want it done, again, more as a dialogue, more as a partnership, and less as a lecture series. We also need to look at the size and the footprint of our military, and this is what I mean by the militarization of our foreign policy. It is not sustainable in the long term. It is not necessary in the long term. And I think one of the primary challenges of the new administration is going to be to enter into some real strategic discussions that go beyond strictly military on how can we better engage, reduce our footprint down to something around the 1989 level, build up their external defense capabilities, but more than that, look to other partners who might be able to come into the Gulf and provide some of the external guarantee role that we have played in the past. I am not in any way suggesting a return to the Twin Pillars program. I was around for that, and I don't really think that that is operable. But what I would hope would be the first task of a new administration would be to move away from a defense cooperation mentality that is strictly based on military presence, military sales, and engagement with local militaries, and broadens the aperture to, as I said, political, financial, economic, and diplomatic across the board. These are states that have been good friends of ours for 20 or 30 years. We share strategic goals. We share strategic missions, but we need to change the tone, the structure, and the content of the dialogue. Thank you.